What's up, y'all? This is Rommel Watley, and welcome to Truckin' Hustle, the podcast for truckin' entrepreneurs. If you want to learn about the trucking industry from the business side of things, you're in the right place. Every week, I interview the people who are making it happen on a daily basis. I get them to share their successes, their failures, and sometimes even their secrets. The goal is to show you how you too can create financial freedom in the booming trucking industry. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
We get about almost 300 trucks. We're talking a lot of guys, you know, a lot of guys, payroll. It's just a staff, you know, just building up to a team. Like my dispatch team consisted of just 2-3 guys. That's it. You know, I'm up at almost 20. My goal is 400. So I'm gonna get to 300 here pretty soon. And my goal by 2023 is to be at 400 truck fleet.
Turn my mic up. Take it there. On the road to the riches, life takes a toll like bridges. Good friends become foes and snitches. Better watch who knows in your business. All right, so my glasses are fogging up because it is about 101 degrees here in sunny San Antonio, right, Texas. But we got more heat than that. We got more heat inside than outside, right? I am here with the man himself, Mr. Raul Mendez from Texas Chrome. Raul, thank you for being on Truckin' Hustle, man.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for you guys for coming by.
Listen, this is an interview that I've, honestly, between me and you, I've been dreaming of this interview for a while. I've been following your social media, checking you guys out, and what you've built here is amazing, right? So to be here is even more amazing. This facility is crazy. I mean, so much parts to like the shop, to the gym. We'll talk about the gym later. But there's just so much going on, and we're gonna get into that. But again, thank you so much for being on the show. You know, I want to really get into your story and just talk about Texas Chrome, talk about TCT and everything you do, man, because you just do a lot. All right. We have a lot to unpack. All right. Yes, sir, so you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Cool. So kind of just getting started customarily. We always like to kind of go into the backstory of our guests, just get an understanding of how they kind of got to where they're at. So just give us a little bit of your backstory. Where are you from? Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
No, for sure. For sure. So born in 73. I was actually born in Mexico, Piedra Negra, Coahuila. Bilingual.
So to say it one more time. Pene who?
Piedras Negras, Coahuila.
Piedras Negras, Coahuila. What does that mean?
Like a border town. So here, of course, we're in South Texas. So it's a border town of Eagle Pass, Texas. It's a small town.
Okay.
Across the border. So it's called Piedras Negras.
Okay.
So I was born there in Mexico in 73. So my mom and dad, didn't speak in English, you know, but I was raised in San Antonio. So 74, 75, we moved to San Antonio and we started, you know, it's crazy because my dad been around trucking all his life. You know, he started as a truck driver and started in the early 70s, mid 70s. And for him, it was always his goal to become an owner operator, you know, become independent, you know, contractor and buy his own truck. But as a kid, I mean, I tell you, it was a struggle, you know, for him just constantly just working, driving. And for my mom, you know, it was my brother and my sister. So it was three, you know, raising three kids.
Right.
No English. And it was tough for her, you know, because my dad was always out.
Right.
He was always driving. So over the road, what I call OTR. So over the road, he was driving to say 2-3 weeks out on the road and he'd come in for 3 or 4 days. So I would barely see him, you know, as a kid growing up in high school, middle school. And I didn't play any sports. I was kind of one of those kids that, you know, back of the class, didn't really get involved with anything.
Right.
And no social life and just to myself, you know, but it was tough, man. And my mom, I got to give her all the praise and the glory because she did it, you know, she did it. And
do you know why your family moved to San Antonio per se?
Well, just for better opportunity.
Okay.
You know, better opportunity. My dad was always wanting to become a truck driver.
Okay.
And at the early age, you know, he got a CDL and started driving.
And he kind of heard this was the place to be. Any family or anything here? Did you guys
no
have?
No family. No.
Okay.
You guys just came to San Antonio, started here.
What was San Antonio like as far as you can remember back? I mean, obviously 74, 75, you were a kid, but growing up, like, what was it like? What was it like in the area?
Besides being hot? I mean, it was cool. It was simple, you know, and the environment, you know, just growing up. I mean, as a kid, you know, I always looked up to my dad, you know, seeing him. The very few times that I would see him growing up, you know, I always watched him and the fact that he worked so hard, you know?
Right.
And taught me all everything that I know today.
Yeah.
And that was his goal. His goal was just to become an independent contractor. And luckily, you know, in 77 he was able to purchase his first truck. He bought his first truck and was able to do it. And then from there, it just kind of took off.
Okay. So that you were 2 years old at that time. You
were I was actually 6, 7 when he bought his first truck.
So he bought his first truck and he's off. He's over the road. So you don't really see him that much. So tell me about, you said kind of throughout high school, you were quiet kind of to yourself. What tell me about yourself growing up. Like, did you get into any sports? Like, tell me a little bit about that, man. Your childhood. Man,
I didn't do much. you know, and then growing up in high school, I was kind of confused a little bit because, you know, I have an uncle who's an RN, registered nurse. So I wasn't really sure what I was going to do in life. You know, I mean, do I follow my father's footsteps and become a truck driver? Or do I go my uncle's route and try to become an RN? So I looked at both the options and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to become a registered nurse, you know? And,
okay.
Tried school and man, I'm going to tell you, it was tough. It was tough. Books were, you know, it was just too much for me to deal with. I called it quits, you know, after a year or 2 years of just taking basics and going through college. So I called my pops up and said, hey, look, sorry, man, but I need to do something. I need to, you know, teach me how to drive.
Okay. And at this point, where is your dad in his career?
He was, at that point, he had his first truck. Okay. So over the course of the late 70s, he became, you know, what we call a contractor, owner operator. So he was able to add on a couple of pieces of equipment, you know, add on a couple of trucks. And throughout the early, you know, 80s, 90s, we started working for several different companies hauling auto parts for GM and Chrysler.
Okay.
So what we would do is we would haul actually empty racks going to Michigan, Ohio, Toledo, and then loaded racks coming back south. So what we call team driving. So it was always two guys to a truck.
Right.
So for example, if you leave, let's say, believe we start here from San Antonio, you know, you or me are driving, right? We're in a truck and you take off, you start driving, you go from here to Texarkana, you know, 6, 7 hour drive. I'm supposed to be asleep, right? While you're driving. And we get to Texarkana, we switch off, you know, and I drive, you sleep. So team driving was very, very difficult because, man, think about like two guys in a rig, right?
Yeah.
In the same bunk.
Yeah.
So you really got to get to know the guy, right? You guys got to like get along and work it out. Figure out, okay, you know what? Don't matter if you're running day or night, you know, we're running 24/7. So the truck doesn't stop. You know, we average about 6,000 miles a week team driving. So it worked out great. It worked out good. So we did that 80s and 90s. And I graduated in 91 in high school. So when I graduated high school and I'm like, man, that's when I was kind of like, you know, not sure what I was going to do in life, you know, and I tried that RN and didn't work out. So when I approached my pops and, you know, started getting my CDL, he's like, okay, look, it's going to be tough. You know, I can show you. And, I tell you what, man, it was hard. It was hard. It was a hard life, man. I'm a truck driver.
Okay. So you got your CDL and you started driving. So you actually, were you on one of those teams?
Yeah. I was on one of those teams. And, when I started driving, I remember, you know, being with my pops and he was teaching me how to drive, you know, shifting gears, you know, the clutch and stop and go, the backing up. And man, I recall one day I was driving in and I was in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And I'm driving in Atlanta and I'm like, holy crap, like the traffic. It was like 8 o'clock on a Monday morning and I was on the loop of Atlanta and I look at just the whole environment, just the fact that like I'm driving a semi, right? So
right.
I'm driving a rig and you got all these cars next to you, in front of you, behind you, and man, it was overwhelming, you know, and I had to suck it up and just keep going.
Yeah. But your dad being able to grow the company from 1 to 35, let's not pass over that. Like, that must have been a lot. I mean, not even being from the country, like, how did he do it? Like, what was the...
Just worked hard.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people that as a kid growing up, you know, I always tell guys, like, I never saw my pops.
Yeah.
He was always working, you know, and... Different owner operators will tell you, okay, I work hard, but you know what? You know, to get ahead in life, you got to make struggles. You got to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
And I think my pops did that because, you know, as a kid, you know, I tell you, I miss like his birthdays wasn't around. There was holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving. There was some holidays where I never see him.
Right.
You know, we're talking 30 days running consecutive and then coming in for 3, 4 days. And those 3, 4 days we ran fast. You know, let's say you come in on a Friday, right back Monday morning, Monday afternoon, he's right back on it, you know, over the road. And then he pushed another 3, 4 weeks out. So, you know, just working hard. And,
how did he understand like the business to build it up? Like to get from being a single owner operator to start adding on trucks? Did he get like a good contract or what was the catalyst for that to start growing the fleet?
Man, just having good teams, just having good drivers, having that relationship with the guys, you know, my dad was real one-on-one, you know, and talking to his drivers and then just building up his credit. You know, because think about this, like his first truck, he didn't have, I mean, didn't speak in English.
Right.
Came from Piraneras, you know, Eagle Pass. He didn't have any funds. He had to work for somebody else and save up little by little. And man, I remember, you know, I recall like as a kid driving in a car, every Sunday he would drive and I was wanting to, you know, purchase that for his first truck. And I was driving in the car and I was sitting in the back seat and it was hot, you know, and I was probably about 4 or 5 at that time. And man, the car, I could see the roadway, man. It didn't have any, you could see the asphalt. You
know? Yeah.
That's how old the car was.
Yeah. Like Flintstones.
So, I mean, it's tough, you know?
Yeah. All right. Got you. All right. So now you get into the business. You start team driving. You said you're on one of those teams, but you started with your dad. Your dad trains you, right, to drive. You learn, get your chops, cut your teeth in driving. Then kind of tell me about where things go from there.
Man, so I started driving. It was 1996, just going across country, going to Toledo, Michigan, Ohio, team driving. Always had a guy with me. So my dad would always, you know, he would always give me his, I don't want to say his right-hand guy, but one of his lead guys, right?
Right. Somebody you could trust.
Yeah.
His son, you know, he's going to take care of you.
Yeah. And I tell you, everybody learns, you know, from experiences. And I recall one afternoon, I was in Effingham, Illinois, small town in Illinois, and it was cold. It was snowing. Some of the roads were closed. It was probably about maybe 15, 18 inches of snow. And it was brutal, man. It was cold. And I'm like, holy crap, I'm driving, you know, truck and trailer loaded. And the guy's asleep, right? And he comes out of the bunk and he's looking at me like, you know, hey, son, you're good? You're good? And I'm holding on to the wheel and I'm like, yes, sir. Yeah, I'm good. I'm driving. Well, guess what? I lost control, you know. I was only going 20, 25 miles an hour. But as soon as I hit a draft of wind, I just lost it.
Oh,
just
wow.
Lost it. So I jackknifed. Luckily, there was no cars involved. At that time, there was very little traffic. But it was early in the morning. I lost control, I jackknifed. But it was a good experience for me, you know. And it goes to show you, you know, a lot of times I tell people, us as truck drivers, you know, we have to be in the defensive at all times.
Yeah.
You know, what's ahead of you? What's in front of you? You know, constantly looking. You can't be distracted whatsoever. And it's a tough career.
Yeah, and I mean that could have discouraged you.
Yeah,
as well. So sure. how did you move forward past that, you know, experience?
Man, I overcame it. You know, I just sucked it up, and it is what it is. I mean, it was an accident, what I call, but it was a learning experience for me. You know, to become a better driver, and I learned from it.
Got you. So what was next after that?
So 96, kept driving. So at that time, I already had about 2-3 years of experience, you know. Of course, I started with that incident and just growing and learning everything about the business, learning how to, you know, what the driver's experience, you know, what the trucks go through, pre-trips, post-trips, everything to do with traffic, everything to do with weather, and then just evolved into the business, you know. And that was back in 96. So we started the company here, Triple RD. So we opened up this business in 2001.
Okay.
At that time, we were already up to like 70 trucks.
Okay.
So our goal in 01 was to pretty much build Triple RD so to service our equipment.
Okay.
And we started doing that. And
so that was in this facility here?
Yeah, that's his facility
so,
right here.
So the first business was Triple R Diesel.
Correct.
And that was to service those trucks. Okay. Got you. So you start that business. Tell me about starting that business. How was it starting a diesel shop?
Yeah.
And so, was it only solely for your trucks? Did you guys take outside fleet carriers?
Well, we were so busy with our own trucks, you know, so we were just servicing our trucks and hiring mechanics and learning how to like deal. Okay. We have our own technicians now, you know, we're going to service our own equipment. But it worked out good. It worked out great.
So you guys start the shop. Tell me about that. So who actually initiated starting the shop? Whose idea was that? And how did you guys kind of get started doing that?
That was my dad's idea.
Okay.
Building the shop. We called it Triple R.
Yep.
So it's me and my brother and my dad. You know, figured out 3 R's. We'll call it Triple R Diesel.
Makes sense.
Catchy name. And then we started hiring, you know, mechanics and it just getting the feel of a repair facility, you know, figuring out, okay, what do we, you know, we're going to stock on filters. We're going to stock on parts. And then we just evolved into just a repair facility.
Got you. And a full-fledged repair facility. You said you guys were just like pretty much doing your own equipment because you had so much equipment. You didn't have time to take anybody else's stuff. Is that still the same today or do you guys?
That's still the same today. Yeah.
Just your own stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So the shop was created in 01. And in 2002, my dad had this idea And he what he said, he's like, you know, let's get a truck. Let's build a dump truck out of it. You know, let's get a Peterbilt used chassis. We'll knock the sleeper off of it. We'll put a dump body on it. Let's paint it. You know, let's paint it. Let's put some lights on it.
All right, guys, Truck and Hustle has now partnered with Transpo CFO, powered by Venning. Transpo CFO offers a streamlined monthly subscription for businesses to consolidate their accounting, payroll, and tax needs into one flat monthly rate, saving businesses a tremendous amount of time and money while making their financial operations much smoother for the long road ahead. Check out Transpo CFO in the description below and tell them Truck and Hustle sent you. Now let's get back to the show.
And let's put it on the highway. You know, let's put it out here on 35 and let's see what it does.
For marketing.
Yeah. Okay. For marketing and for selling purposes.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because at that time, I mean, we were already running trucks, you know, but we wanted to kind of just evolve to something else and kind of experiment into the actual truck sales side.
Okay.
And man, I'll tell you, my dad's idea worked, man. It's Saturday morning, he parks the rig. It's done, right? We have worked on it for 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
We park it out on Saturday morning. And we probably had about 4 or 5 people just stopping, just looking at it.
Okay.
And man, truck sold within hours.
So what'd you guys do that truck? Tell me about that process. You guys purchased like an old truck and then just restored it?
Yeah, just an old truck. What I call a kind of pre-emission.
Okay.
Used Peterbilt.
Yep.
Yeah, and just getting it and just building a body on it and just customizing, repainting it. Kind of like a refurbing. Getting an old home and just refurbing it.
Right. And then just put it right there on the side of the road. Yeah. And everybody stopped by like, what is that thing?
Oh, yeah. For sure, man. Got a lot of attention.
Yeah. For sure. All right, cool. So you guys start the shop. And then what happens after that?
So we liked that idea. So we saw truck sales as an opportunity for us to expand our business. And we got into buying more equipment. So we started going across country, you know, from auctions to wholesalers, from California to New York. We started going to different auctions and buying used equipment. So my dad, myself, or my brother, one of us would just kind of pick and choose who's going to go to these auctions. We fly in and we look at the equipment. We look at the, you know, if it's a good condition or not. And we would buy trucks. You know, we would buy 3 or 4 or 5 at a time and then bring them back into San Antonio and get them here and start refurbing them. You know,
okay.
Building them from the ground up.
What auctions you guys going to for these trucks? Like,
what?
Like Richie Bros or that, what?
Richie Brothers, Taylor Martin, different auctions.
Okay. Got you. Is there a certain price point that you'd want to stick around for what you wanted to purchase?
So our idea is buying a truck, man, the conditions, anywhere between the 20 to 30, 40,000 market,
mm-hmm.
and then putting about 15, 20,000 in it.
Okay.
And after that, just flipping the truck and selling it.
Okay.
And I think what worked for us is the internet. The internet is just powerful. I mean, back then that was 2, 3 month time frame. And I realized like, oh, wow, like the internet's, man, you could just build off of it. You know,
right.
We had a truck and we customized it and then we had it on the internet and within like days, it just sold.
What type of guys are buying these trucks?
Oh gosh, everybody, everybody, man. Everybody that had the money, they would just buy it.
So, I mean, cause these trucks, I mean, obviously trucks are used to, you know, haul commodities from point A to point B, but when you start tricking them out and putting all this customization into them, it becomes a little bit more than about hauling freight.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to show you one.
Yeah. You grab one.
So the idea is building, let's say building a rig like this, right?
Okay.
So we would get a Peterbilt, you know, and what we would do is just customize it. So this is actually a conventional Peterbilt. What we did, we actually took the sleeper off of it, built a dump body on it, and then customize it. So we would do the stacks, the lights, the paint job. We would do the front end, you know, go to 16 fronts, you know, polish it up, and man, something like this on the internet, it would just sell. It would sell instantly.
Right.
So we got smart. So what we started doing, we started just leaving the equipment on the internet. And then people kept calling. I'm like, hey, Raul, is this truck available? Like, you know what? It's not. We just sold it, but I could build you something like it.
Yeah.
You know, with a deposit, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to build. And by then, we had a list. We had a waiting list.
I mean, yeah. do these guys even care about the engine?
Yeah, but I mean, we would do our work.
You take care of that. The
engine.
Right.
We would do like bottom end, top end of the motors. We wouldn't overhaul them, but we would do what was necessary to make sure the truck was you know, good driving conditions.
Right. Yeah. But they're more concerned with the aesthetic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Once they see pictures like this.
Yeah, nah, that's beautiful, man.
We had customers wiring us 10,000. Like, hey, I'm ready to buy. You
know? Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nah, that's cool. All right. So you guys start that now. So you start buying trucks. Flipping trucks. So now you go from the shop, now you're a truck dealer. but not really a conventional truck dealer, like a custom truck dealer. Like that's kind of like your thing, right? Correct. All right. So tell me more how the business expands.
Good. Yeah, yeah. 05, 06. I mean, we got to a point where we're doing about 15, 20 trucks a month.
Okay.
We had orders, you know, from California, New York. We had people from Canada put orders in. So they would give us a deposit. You know, we would tell them, we would create a retail order. We would say, okay, this is what your truck's going to look like. You know, we'll be done in 6 to 8 weeks. Here's your final bill. We require, you know, deposit. They would send a deposit. And once the truck was done, completed, we would pick them up at the airport, bring them in, and then they would pick up the truck and head on home.
When the person would put a deposit, do you guys even have the truck at that point? Is it like a person has an inquiry?
Yeah.
You guys go get the truck.
And no, we have the trucks
already. You already
have
the truck already.
Yeah, yeah.
So when the person's on the internet, they're looking at the truck stripped.
Correct.
And you're showing them the before and after. You're like, this is what the truck looks like now. When it's done, it's going to look like this.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, got you. And they just dropped that 10K or whatever, and they're ready to go.
Ready to buy, you know. And at the time, it was tough because who's going to have a truck like that already done?
Right.
Available for sale.
Yeah. Who else is doing that type of work, especially in this area?
We were the only ones in the country at that time.
Really?
Other than Trick My Truck back in, you know, with Joplin, Missouri, you know?
Right.
They were real popular back in the day.
So that idea really came from just you guys you just dreamed it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. All right. You said you started doing about 20 to 50 trucks a month.
15 to 20 trucks a month.
20 trucks a month.
Yeah, we got to a point where we custom built about 1,200 trucks.
Okay.
With a span of 01 to 08. Now, 08, that's when the market crashed. You know, we had a big market crash. Man, people stopped buying.
Yeah.
It was tough. In 08, it was just one of those like what do we do now?
You right. know? How much of a team does it take to pump out that kind of inventory, man?
Oh, gosh. It was a team of about 50, 60 guys.
Wow, yeah, 50,
working,
60 guys.
7 days a week.
So you got everything from like the paint, the chrome, all like I'm sure it's like a lot of parts too. Can you go get into like all the different guys that you have working on different parts?
So we got smart. So like in 04, we started realizing like, okay, we're buying all these accessories from other people. Why don't we just create our own shop? Why don't we create Texas Chrome Shop and in-house our stuff, create our own inventory. And at the same time, we're building these trucks, right? So we're going to use our parts on our trucks. So in 04, we created Texas Chrome Shop. So we had Triple R Diesel, we had Texas Chrome Shop. And within the combination of both, we were able to, you know, fulfill all the needs.
All the orders. How was it getting that started, the Chrome Shop?
Oh, man.
Difficult? You had to like outsource that stuff and all
that? Just getting, you know, vendors, becoming a vendor from different manufacturers.
Yeah.
You had your bumpers, you had your grills, you had your lights. You know, back in the day, LED lights were popular.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted LED lights.
Right.
Everybody wanted stacks, right? So I mean, it was just creating a big old accounts list, you know, of all these vendors and suppliers that we had.
How'd you guys know where to start, though? Like, because that's like a whole different business.
It is. Totally different.
Like, did you know anybody who was in the business or anything like that? Or you just kind of like started like cold calling different vendors and saying, hey, do you have this? And how did you know, like, what was a fair price to pay for this stuff in bulk? Like, I'm just trying to get an idea because it's like a brand new business.
Correct. Good question. Yeah. So we just figured it out, you know, little by little, just asking questions, just, you know, what other chrome shops are in the country, you know, kind of feeling them out, you know, calling them like we're a customer and, you know, asking the questions,
yeah.
You know, see what they're going to answer.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. All right. So you guys have the chrome shop. We got the shop, you're doing the custom builds, you're doing 15 to 20 trucks a month, which is crazy. And that business is doing well, obviously. But you still want to go further. You still want to expand. You still have a hunger for more. So what is next?
So in 08, the market crashed. You know, we were like, man, people stopped buying. You know, 08, 09. So we started realizing, okay, you know what? Maybe we don't do too much. You know, not too much bling bling, not too much stacks and lights and chrome.
Right.
What if we just get a conventional Peterbilt or Kenworth, whatever. And if we say we bought the truck for 30, 35K, just do the minimum. You know, don't go too crazy and put 20K, 30K in and try to flip it for 80K. What if we just buy a truck for 30, 35, but sell it for 40, 45,
right? Mm.
Maybe do just basics like tires, you know, mechanical, check the lights, make sure it's in good working condition, DOT ready. And that worked too, you know, and people at that time in 08, 09 try to save money and try to cut costs. So, man, I'll tell you another story. In 09, we had a guy that was just buying trucks left and right, you know, and never forget his name. His name is Bernard.
Okay.
Right? He comes in my office. He comes in and it's like, hey, basic guy, regular guy buying a truck with his little duffel bag, right? And hey, I'm here to buy a truck. I'm like, okay.
The duffel bag has money in it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was all cash.
All right. I like Bernard already. Yeah.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, my kind of guy.
But he was looking at a truck, and then he's like, okay, you know, I go out there with him. I show him the truck, and, you know, we turn it on, look at the inside, open up the hood. He checks it out. He's like, okay, I'll take it. All right. 40K. Okay. So he comes out and he just busts out 40K cash, buys a truck. Well, the following week, he buys another truck, right? He calls me again. He's like, hey, Raul, I'm ready for another one. I'm like, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are you looking for? Same type of truck.
Right.
All right. I got two or three I can show you. So I go out through the yard, show him the trucks, and he's looking out, you know, checking, trying to see which one he wants. So he picks one out, buys another one, buys a second truck. A couple of weeks later, man, he calls me again. I'm like, okay, but like this dude's something. I got to know what the hell you're hauling. You know, what are you doing, man?
So, right, yeah, right.
Yeah, so I'll pull him out to the side, like, Bernard, like, what are you doing? What are you hauling? He's like, I'm hauling frac sand. I'm hauling frac sand in a pneumatic trailer. And to me at the time, I didn't know what a pneumatic trailer was. I didn't know what frac sand was, but he was in the oil and gas business. So I'm like, man, Bernard, you know, hey, if you don't mind, I'd like to learn what you're doing. You know, hey, maybe help me out. I'll help you. You help me. You know, maybe we can both grow together and I'll find you more trucks, but give me a shot with one or two trucks, you know, under your company.
Right.
So he
now, real quick, Raul, at this point, the transport side of the business, are you guys still up and running?
We were actually downsizing.
You downsized, okay.
So I mentioned 08, 09.
The crash.
Yeah, so the crash, when the market crashed in 08, 09, in 08, you know, we were hauling, we were probably doing about 75 trucks, you know, OTR.
Yeah.
And the fuel, if you go back in the day, fuel spiked up. I mean, it jumped up dramatically. So the company we were working for didn't give us a fuel surcharge. So we had brand new trucks, brand new Pete's, you know, and trailers. And man, we started downsizing.
Got you.
But we were good at the time because we were already building, Triple R Diesel was already building these semi trucks. So we're like, you know, we downsized.
So you kind of pivoted into that.
Correct.
Got you. So you guys had like a dedicated contract with a company. They weren't taking care of you guys on the fuel end. And you guys said, you know, let's kind of pivot into this. The chrome shop and flipping the trucks, yeah, and so forth. Okay, yeah. Got it. I just want to see what was going on with the transport, because now you're talking about a new transportation business, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so let's get back to Bernard. Bernard tells you about oil and gas.
Back to Bernard with the duffel bag.
With
right?
the duffel bag. Duffel yeah, bag duffel Bernard. Bag
cash. yeah, man. So three trucks. I'm like, I mean, come on, Bernard. You got to help me out. I'll help you. You help me. You know, yeah. Like, give me a shot with one truck. He's like, okay, I'll help you out. Like, we'll put the truck under my fleet. You know, I'll take a little percentage off the top and I'll pay you. Well, this guy was making crazy money. I mean,
what's crazy money?
One truck, 35K.
One truck, 35K.
Per
what?
Month.
Per month? Okay.
Per month, yeah.
And what year again? That's 2008?
You said? That was 2009.
2009. Okay. Sounds like good money to me.
Yeah. So 2009, we had this oil boom in South Texas that nobody really knew about, right? So 2009, 2010... You know, the industry kind of changed a little bit to where we had this oil boom in South Texas. You know, oil was high, you know, the price of barrel. And there was a big need for trucks. There was a need of just trucking. And that's what he did. We were hauling frac sand in pneumatic tankers. So he gave me the opportunity. We started. So I decided to create a company called TCT in 2010.
Okay.
Which we did, and started with one truck.
Now, how many trucks did Bernard have oil in the sand at that time?
On his own, he had about 10.
He had about 10.
He was running about 10.
So he was kind of still in the infant stages, just kind of building up himself. And that's when you kind of caught him. So you caught him at a good time.
Yeah.
It wasn't too crazy yet.
Yeah, I did.
All right. So just for the listeners who don't understand, can you tell us like how that kind of works? Hauling frac sand, because you said it to somebody, they may not even know what you're talking about. So what can you tell us about that?
So the old companies, what they do when they drill complete wells, so they'll drill a well, and when they complete the well, that's where frac sand comes in. So they use frac sand and chemicals to pump the frac sand and chemicals downhole. So they'll do that, and they'll actually extract, they'll pump the chemicals and sand downhole, and then when they hit the shale formation, it extracts the oil out of the ground. So you got drilling, you got completions, you got production. So that's the oil and gas industry.
You said drilling, completions, and then production?
And then production.
Okay, so I know what drilling is. What's completion?
Yeah, so we're delivering frac sand to the well sites. So we load up at a load site and then go to location. We're on location and we're just delivering and offloading to a silo.
Okay, got you. And then once it goes into the silo, because you're talking to somebody who doesn't understand this business.
Yeah.
So once it goes to the silo, what does that mean? Like, where is that going?
No, exactly. I mean, even coming from us, like our background, yeah, you got OTR, you got reefer.
Right.
You know, I was a regular truck driver.
Right.
And then when you come into oil and gas, and I'm like, holy crap, that's a whole different environment.
Right, you're saying words that sound like
they
make sense to you, but I don't get them. So
no, for sure.
When you say you deliver them to the silo, the silo is? I know what a silo is, but where do they go from the silo? Like, is this
from the silo? They actually pump it down ground,
pump it into the ground, and then that's what fracks the ground, right?
Correct.
Okay, got you. So you guys are doing that back and forth how many times a day?
Oh gosh, we were doing. So that was a time frame about 2011. You know, what I call kind of like an oil boom in South Texas.
Yeah.
And man, they were raking in money. They were doing good. And so he was paying me every week. So I was working for him, right?
Okay.
I was working kind of like working under him.
Right. So like leased under his company.
Okay. So when I decided to just kind of branch out and just kind of go on my way and create TCT, you know, I wanted to just kind of create and get my own account, you know,
yeah.
And maybe possibly, you know, earn or work for my own crew.
Yeah. How were you able to do that? How did you just like build some relationships while you were working with
him?
Asking
a lot of questions, man, figuring it out, you know, realizing that it's not easy, you know, because drivers had to become Safeland certified. They had to become H2S certified. They had to become, you had to be clean shaved. You know, you couldn't
be clean shaved.
Yeah. You could go with a full beard, you know, you go
really?
To these well sites. They're real strict.
Okay.
They're real strict. Yeah. Yeah. You got to have full PPE, steel toes, hard hat, respirator, and you had to have all your certifications. So it took time. It took time for us to figure out all that.
Okay.
Requirements.
So is it like a lot of politics involved in the industry? Like when you say like clean shaving and all that, like they want you to look a certain way, like you're driving a truck. What's the difference if you got a beard or not?
It's all about safety.
It's all about safety.
Yeah.
Okay.
Safety was priority. Number one priority.
Got you. All right. So you start growing in that business. You start making relationships. And then tell me about how you start growing TCT.
We started evolving into just growing and adding more and more trucks to the fleet. So we started in 20, you know, we created TCT in late 2010.
Yeah.
And in 2011, 2012, we're good. We're all great years. 13 and 14 were probably the best years. And man, we were doing good. We're getting to a point where like oil companies started requiring trucks. You know, they needed trucks. There wasn't enough trucks to go around.
Right.
So all these oil companies just paid whatever, you know. It got to a point where we're getting paid $2,200 a day per truck, whether the truck worked or didn't work. That's how.
Whether they did or didn't work.
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
Yeah, we call that the dedicated rig. Dedicated rig.
Okay, so this is obviously a specialized type of job, right? And like you said, it takes special safety training, special PPE, all this kind of stuff. So if you're in this niche, it's kind of like, like you said, the work don't stop. Like they always have work. But who are you going to get this work?
Man, we just get contracts, you know, and just little by little, just showing them that we had the drivers that were certified. We had the dispatch team. We had the coordinating team. We had the equipment to haul, you know, and not so much the equipment, but the capacity.
The capacity.
To be able to do a location, a well. Let's say a well is going to run, a two-well zipper is going to run, you know, 2 weeks at a time. You know, are you going to be able to withstand and have that capacity from start to finish.
Right.
That was important.
Are you bidding on this work or is it just something like, hey, this is what we're paying, bring your trucks and this is what
you have. Back in 13, 14, it wasn't so much about a bid. It was about who had the trucks, who didn't.
Okay.
You know, so these oil companies became, you know, price of oil back in the day in 2014 was over $100 a barrel. So they were making a killing and there was too many completion, like wells that were completing, but not enough trucks.
Gotcha.
So that time, at the time, oil operators were just like, hey, look, if you have the trucks, you got 30, 40, we'll pay you. We want to be able to allocate those trucks to our location. So we were making a killing. I mean, we did, gosh, we ran about, at that time, we were up to about 100 trucks, you know, between owner operators and the company trucks. Company trucks were about 30, owner ops were about 70. So about 100 trucks running back in late 13 to 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when time for good.
Yeah. how many different companies would you see out there typically like on a frack site? Like
besides trucking companies?
Yeah. Trucking companies.
Oh gosh. Man, you know, so in 14 times are great. Good. It worked out, you know, I'm like, man, these trucks are making a killing. We're doing about 10, 12,000 a week.
Okay.
Net, 14,000, 15,000 gross. We have people coming in from all over, you know, just buying equipment. They all wanted to get into oil and gas. They all wanted to haul frack sand. And,
right.
Man, in 15, I hate to say this, but 15, man, oil crashed. It just came down.
Why? What happened?
15 just came down. It, you know, we were at over $100 a barrel and the market just came down. And by then, 15, you talk about maybe, you know, US probably had about 1,600 drilling rigs at that time, 13 and 14. and just oil crashed.
So when oil crashes, what happens to you guys?
Work just kind of went away.
So what do you do?
Figure it out, you know?
So you have a bunch of drivers now at this point. They're depending on you for work. They're used to working every day, probably 2-3 runs a day or whatever they're doing, trips a day. And then it just cold turkey like that stops.
Cold turkey, man.
So you get a call and they say, hey, we're not drilling today. Is that how it works?
That's how pretty much what happened in 15, you know? So a lot of the guys that were in, you know, some of my competitors back in the day in 14 were buying brand new trailers, brand new trucks, and just couldn't survive, you know? They couldn't make that payment. Work just stopped.
Yeah.
So I was blessed. I was one of the fortunate ones that with my money, I was able to pay all my equipment off. So I didn't have a lot of debt. I didn't have bills. I didn't have truck payments or trailer payments. So, you know, the drivers were used to making about $2,000 a week. Well, when work stopped in 15, you know, we had to just, man, it was just one of those moments. It was like, it was tough. You know, we had to just kind of get by and figure it out. Okay, what do we do now? You know, what do we do? What do we do? And, well, luckily in 15, 16, we went from making, let's say, $1,200 on a 100-mile haul at $1,200. Well, in 15, 16, I was only making $300 to $350.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how much it dropped.
That's dramatic, man. Yeah. So, okay. So the drivers are still, they're still working. They're still doing it. But why is it a drop so much? Why is it such a drastic drop in the rate? Because you're still doing the same work.
Correct.
So is it like a matter of supply and demand? There's so much supply and there's not enough demand so they could pay you less? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so the demand dropped, and then oil companies, oil operators had to figure it out, like, okay, so if they were paying X amount for sand, they were paying about $120 a ton, you know, and trucking was expensive. You know, trucking, oh my God. I mean, they were giving us $2,200 a day per truck. So they had to just, you know, figure out, okay, how do we save costs? You know, how
save costs by paying you guys less.
Yeah.
So did a lot of guys leave you at that time?
A lot of guys left. You know, I went from 100, I scattered scale back down to about 30.
Okay.
30, which were all my company trucks at that time. So by then I was already at 30 trucks. Luckily, unfortunately, I was able to just have my equipment paid for, but felt bad for my guys.
Yeah, for sure. So what'd you do with the trucks during that time? The 30 trucks that you left with your
man,
guys?
Man, I went to West Texas. I went to East Texas. I would try to find work in oil and gas. And just do what I had to do, you know. The runs didn't pay much, but luckily in 16, 17, oil started coming back up a little bit, you know, and back in 18, it creeped up. So eventually rates were coming back up.
How do you manage that? Because a lot of people, I mean, you guys are a pretty sizable, you know, sized fleet, right? Even to this day currently, but a lot of, you know, owners struggle with having to have those hard conversations with their drivers when, you know, things dry up and things aren't looking like they weren't once were. Going through that, how did you handle those time with your guys?
Man, just talking to them and just giving them just positive feedback. Let them know, like, hey, it's coming back. You know, it's going to get better. Just helping them, you know. For example, let's say a driver had a bad week. You know, he's in a bind. Help the guy out. You know, if he's got a payment, he's got to pay X amount, you know, we advance them the money. And just able to just get by and just hustling and looking for work, you know, trying to just get out there and just put your name out there. You know, by then, I mean, TCT, we already had a name and a build of regards to what the trucks look like, but also the drivers, but just eventually just getting our name out there and finding the work.
But of course, you can't please everybody. And of course, there's going to be guys that aren't happy and that, you know, move on and so forth. And that's just, it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah, and there's, you know, in trucking, there is a big turnover on drivers. There is,
for sure. All right. So 2015, that time period comes. You guys go through what you go through. You have to kind of pivot. You said you went to some other oil fields in other areas to try to find some other work. Just scrambling, pretty much doing what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So 15, we had a kind of like a different avenue where we had Discovery reach out to us, you know.
Okay.
And actually late 14, early 15, Discovery Communications and Discovery Channel was interested in doing a show, you know, doing a show on reality, on the family, on the business. So at that time, they already had seen, you know, all the YouTube videos,
what you guys
seen
are doing,
all the bills that we've done, and you know, over the course of the last 12, 15 years, and they did what I call kind of like a clip, you know, a 5-minute clip.
Okay,
they come out here, they hired a film crew, they spent about 2 days here, and quick 5 minutes, you kind of introduce the family and they walked around, they saw the property, they saw the area, they saw some of the bills that we were doing. And then when they sent it back to California and get a call the next day, I'm like, hey, we're interested in doing a show for you guys.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, I mean, what does it consist of? You know, what's it going to do? You know,
right.
Is it like one episode? Is it, what's it about? They're like, no, we're interested in doing a whole series.
Right.
I'm like, okay, wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So now that presents a different opportunity for you. It's like, all right, well, the trucking ain't going good. Maybe I could be a movie
right.
star.
There you go. That's right.
For sure. All right, cool. So you do that with Discovery and that's a success, right?
Yeah. So Discovery comes out and we do the series. Consists of 8 episodes.
Okay.
So it was 8 builds. And then when they're here the whole time, I mean, they're here for 3 months consecutive.
Yeah.
A crew of about 15, 16 people living here in San Antonio at a hotel. And they would come out here. They would start filming at about 9 a.m. We're all mic'd up, ready to go. What was hard was having these 8 builds within our property and actually doing them consecutive within the 3 months. So we had to build the 8 rigs from start to finish and be completed, you know, within the 90 days.
Got you. Now their focus for the show, were they focusing more on the chrome shop? Were they focusing on the transportation business? What was it? Or was it just kind of everything, like just touching on all the different
there were
businesses?
There were more focused on the family. You know?
On the family.
They saw the family. They saw bilingual. The channel is Discovery Español.
They
realized like, oh gosh, you guys are bilingual. You guys are in the States. You're in San Antonio.
Yeah.
You build some amazing rigs. Like, hey, let's give you a show. And so it was more about reality. It was more about, you know, yeah, my mother, my father, my sister-in-law, my brother.
Okay.
And my wife. So it consisted of the show of us 6.
Nice. Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah, man.
Was, you hesitated.
Yeah, it was hard, man. It was hard. I mean, cause you had to be, you're mic'd up, right? So you had to be in the zone, you know, you had to be positive and ready to go. And, you know, there was days where you're just like, you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, man, I'm tired. I'm like, don't feel good. Like, yeah, I'm gonna take a day off. Like, no, man, they're here. Like, they're here to
You gotta do what you gotta do. You have an obligation. Oh, does reality TV pay well?
Oh gosh, I got a story for that. So reality, we're done with season 1, right?
Yeah.
You know, with a reality show, there's a lot of ideas in the country. Everybody has ideas, right? So there's clips. You know, some people never make it past a clip. Some people never make it past one episode. You know, and for us to get a whole season, we're like, oh, damn. Like, it's big, right?
Yeah.
And I knew that. You know, people were telling me, it's like, man, you guys are going to be, man, that's a big deal. You know, you're getting a whole season. No, nobody gets that.
Right.
You know, there's different people that have different shops across the country, but they'll never make it past one episode. So, we're done. We're done with season 1 and we're filmed all 8 episodes. We're tired as hell, you know. I mean, we had to run not just the family, but we got the business to run and we were here and they're all, you know, we're done after 90 days after the 8 episodes. We're tired, we're burned out. So Discovery Communications decides to send us over to New York. And this was May and the series hadn't aired yet, right? So the series they had planned for the fall to air in September.
Mm.
So in May, they put us up in Times Square in New York. They put us in front of 300, you know, sponsors. So these sponsors were going to buy like clips for commercials for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the whole lineup. It's not just our show. They had like, you know, 4 or 5 different shows that they were going to promote.
Yeah.
So Discovery's there and we're there and we're backstage. They're going to put us on stage. They're going to introduce us to the people, the 300 people. And man, I'm nervous as hell. You know, I'm back there. I'm like, God damn, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? You know?
Right.
Everybody's
so it's like a pitch. You're like pitching yourself in a way, right? Okay. So 300 sponsors sitting there.
300 people, man. They're all dressed up in suits.
You got to pitch your show.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm back there and I'm sitting with my brother, right? And we're just there. We're talking. We're trying to figure out, okay, you say this, I say that. And my brother's like, yeah. And we're there talking. And all of a sudden the CEO of Discovery comes up, right? He comes up to us and I already knew who he was. I'm like, oh damn, like that's the CEO. He's like, you know what, son? He's like, don't worry about it. Don't be nervous. You guys are gonna be good. I've seen clips. I said, it's gonna be a good show.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna be hit. You know, and when he said that, I was like, oh damn.
Right. He already kind of, you know, he kind of gave you the stamp.
Yeah.
He's already looked at it. He liked the show and he liked the idea.
Yeah. So we're back there, we get on stage and you know, the lady comes up in Discovery, she's on the stage, she's kind of introducing us, you know, the family to the people. And they show this big old screen, you know, the promo for Texas Trocas. So they named it Texas Trocas. So Trocas is the slang word for trucks.
Right.
So instead of using the word Texas Chrome, you can't really translate Chrome in Spanish. So they used Trocas. So Texas Trocas was the name of the show. And they show a 2-minute clip, you know, shoot 2-minute promo. And then we're there and we're talking about, you know, ourselves and what we do and what my brother does and my wife and my sister-in-law. And we're done with the promo. This was the show hadn't even aired, right? So one of the main people, the VP for Discovery, comes up and he gives me a, has me over a contract. So I look at her and I'm like, what is this? I'm like, this is for season two. We want you to sign. I'm like, season two? Like, we haven't even aired season one.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? They're like, yeah, you guys are going to be big.
You already got the green light.
Yeah, you're going to be a hit.
Nice.
And then, I mean, of course, you know, I was kind of like the spokesman for the family, for all six, right? For the rest of the family. So we fly back. I don't want to give her an answer, right? I tell her, like, I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
So I get back home and on the way back, I'm telling the family on the flight, like, hey, they want to sign us for season two. You know, what do you think? And then right away, the family was like, it's too much work, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. So we're getting paid. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but we're getting paid minimal. I'll say minimal, right? Not much.
Okay.
But we did it with the intentions of, like, you know, maybe it'll help our business.
North or south of $100,000?
Oh, way south.
Way south.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, on the flight back to San Antonio, we were, I would say five of the six weren't really interested. I was a person who was like, yeah, let's do this. Like, let's go. Come on. You know, season two, season three, you know, it could keep going. And they're like, you know what? We don't want to do it. You know, we're not interested.
Yeah.
So the VP kept calling me, emailing me, asking me, like, hey, what's your family say? Are you guys interested? You know, we got to know. Still, the season one hadn't even aired. I mean, it was still maybe a month out before it even aired. And I'm like, look, man, we're not really sure. You know, well, I'll get back to you.
Right.
So a couple of days later, she calls. She's like, hey, look, tell me what you want. Just name your price. Like, just tell me, you know, we'll pay.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, damn. All right.
Now we talking.
Yeah. So she comes back and she throws out a number. And I was like, wow. Okay. So it was a big increase.
Okay.
I go to the family. I look, hey, they're going to pay us X amount per episode if we sign today.
Right.
By then, the family looked at the number and I'm like, they're like, oh, wow, damn, this dude is. Yeah, it was a big increase. It's over 400% increase.
Right. So now we're north of 100.
For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
There
so,
we go.
So, I mean, it was one of those, you know, situations where do we do it or do we not? You
right,
know,
right.
It was taking up a lot of our time
right.
with work. So we went ahead and signed and we did it. So we signed for season two with season one not even airing. So September, the show airs. And it's a big hit. You know, man, we were just overwhelmed with the ratings and the feedback. You know, Discovery and Espanola was like, holy, I mean, they were just like in awe because they never really had a hit show.
Right.
And so they grabbed, I mean, they just started promoting our name, our business, the show, season two. So while season one was airing, we were already filming for season two.
Okay. Got you. And then you end up doing season three.
Correct.
So that must have been the real big bag that he don't even want to talk about. That's where the real money.
Yeah,
that's where the real money came in. I could imagine what that was looking like. So what made you call it quits?
Man, it just took too much time.
Just too much time.
You know, it comes to a point in life where, you know, money's not really important, you know, and family's more important.
Yeah.
You know, I got four daughters of my own and business too. You know, you think back, it's 15. We talk about the oil crash in 15. You know, I had equipment. I had traders. I had trucks. I had drivers. You know, I had to put these guys to work. So we had to figure it out. And luckily, you know, oil started creeping back up. So we were able to get back into the rhythm of working.
Right.
So that was 17 and 18. So, yeah, after three seasons, we decided to just kind of
call it quits and focus back on the business.
Yes, sir.
On the core businesses. When things start picking back up and you start building up again, how does that look? Are you calling back old, you know, drivers? Are you saying, hey, guys, we're back. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Tell me how that looks when you start seeing some, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, we started getting busy again. Well, work was good. Work was solid. I started calling some of my old guys back. Hey, guys, look, we're busy. We're good. We got these locations. These, you know, this work is coming. It's we're going to be good.
Yeah.
We're going to be good. That was 19. And then 2020, you know, man, I thought that was going to be the year. You know, I was in a big meeting. I had 150 people in front of me. I was pitching them the idea where, hey, we got two crews. We're full time. We're ready to go. We're working. We thought 2020 was going to be the year, but unfortunately, no, it wasn't. You know, COVID came.
Yeah. So you said 150 people. Who were those 150 people?
We had owner operators. We had drivers.
Just
we had
coordinators. Waiting.
Yeah. So at the time of 2020, prior to COVID, we were already at back to 100 trucks. You know, we were at about 110 working. We had two crews working full time. We were down here in South Texas. We thought, you know, hey, we're gonna be even busier come 2020.
You know? Right, right. So it seems like it's very important in this business and fracking business or transport and sand to like kind of diversify, right? Because there's times when things just kind of like fall apart. No, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So like knowing that, how do you diversify, or is it kind of like when that business slows down, you focus on another one? Like how do you think about that? Because you know these, it's going to fluctuate. Like you already know, you've seen it happen multiple times, right? So looking forward, it's like, how do you prepare for that? Knowing that at some point it's good now, but it's going to go down again.
Correct. I mean, I always tell people, I mean, stick to what you know, and you know, when COVID hit, we had to diversify. We had to, you know, do what we got to do. We tried reefer. We tried over the road. We tried that those different avenues. But then I realized like, man, it's just too many people involved, you know, with the brokers and figuring out the lanes, figuring out the pricing, figuring out, okay, you know, is this a good rate? Is this a bad rate? You know, and it was tough. It was tough for us.
Right. With what you do, it's just very straight to the point. You haul A to B, you get paid, and that's it. And your guys are home every day, right? So like you don't have anybody over the road now. These guys are hauling, they're working like what? Like how
long? No, oil, gas, we're working 24/7.
No, but I'm saying they work shifts. So they're only working like an 11 to 14 hour day.
Correct.
And then the next, so there's nobody over the road.
Yeah.
So that's better for like retention, for driver retention, right? Drivers hate being over the road. Not hate, excuse me, because some drivers like to be over the road, but a lot of guys want to be local if they can.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. So the life of a driver over the road is tough. It's tough.
Yeah. It's a tough life.
You're away from family and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. So you guys start building back up. So when do things, COVID hits. So you take a hit there. When do things start kind of coming back for you?
In the fall of 2020, work comes back. So what helped TCT in the fall of 2020 is by then, everyone's already left. You know, you think about like what COVID did and the implications of people had to pay their bills. You know, people had to just survive, you know, and pay for the families, you know, pay for their truck payments, their trailer payments. So people did, like, for example, flatbed, reefer, drive-in, I mean, you name it, they were out there. So back in the oil and gas sector, a lot of the guys my competitors that have left, you know, they're gone. So we stuck here and we stayed in South Texas. So in the fall of 2020, we were able to get back to work and get back into the flow of things.
Right. Slowly. What do you do to stand out in your business? Or do you even need to stand out because the demand is so crazy? But so that's two questions. Do you need to stand out? And if you do, what are you doing to stand out? What separates you from anybody else who's hauling?
Provide great service. Have the relationship with these owner operators. You know, I was taught in a young age with my dad, you know, seeing that one-on-one that he did, you know, over the course of 80s and 90s, that, you know, he was able to build his fleet, but learning these owner operators, you know, and having that one-on-one connection, you know, and, you know, I myself, I'm owner operator, right? So I see it as TCT. Yes, I have company owned trucks, but also I have owner operators.
Right.
So these guys rely on us to not just do the billing and dispatching, but the pay, but to provide the work, to be there for them.
So when you say provide good service, it sounds like not only are you saying to like your customer, but to your drivers also.
Correct.
Like you're serving your drivers also. Is that right?
That's right. That's
so
right.
From a customer standpoint, what does it take to provide good service to your customers? And who are your customers? You have a lot of customers? Is it just one customer?
So it's oil and gas. We do final mile logistics. So we're providing the service of being there on location and keeping up with the frac crew. So the frac crew consists of, let's say, for example, if it's a location that's pumping every 3 hours and they're pumping 13 trucks a stage, well, you got to keep up with that frac crew. You got to have those 13 trucks every 3 hours. So we're working 24/7. So there's times where at night drivers will fall off, you know, they get tired, they go on break. So it's keeping up with the frac crew, keeping up with the customers and providing that service.
What will get you kicked out?
Gosh, shut the job down.
Yeah. Shut the job down.
Shut the job
and
down.
And how do you do that?
Well, what just pretty much run what they call NPT, non-productive time.
Okay. How does that work?
Just you pretty much that NPT will happen if you just, you're not just paying attention and you just kind of like it is what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could go a little deeper into that, because like, so now the driver would do that or the company.
The logistics company.
The logistics company. Like,
that'll be on our side. That'll be the coordinating team and the dispatch team of just pretty much, let's say, for example, let's say a holiday weekend.
Yep.
Let's say 4th of July weekend, just to kind of pick a holiday, right?
Yep.
So you have a weekend of what we call 4-day weekend, right? So you, if a well's going to run throughout that weekend, you got to make sure you have the drivers and the staff to be able to keep up and provide that the delivery of that sand throughout that 4-day weekend. Say Saturday morning comes around, 6 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden drivers start falling off, trucks go home, guys bail, and guess what? You shut the job down. And that pretty much ruins your reputation.
Yeah, got you. And when something like that happens, will anybody else work with you again?
No.
Pretty difficult. Yeah, everybody knows like what you did, and it's hard to come back from that.
That's right.
How do you manage all these different businesses? Because you guys have Triple R, you have TCT, you have the Chrome Shop. That's a lot of different teams.
It is.
As a leader, how are you managing three different teams in three different types of niches? And it's three, right? Am I missing anything?
Correct. No, it's three different companies. Yeah. Three different entities.
Three different entities that do totally different things.
That's right.
How do you manage it?
Man, we just have a great family-owned business, you know?
Okay.
We have my brother who runs the body shop and the Chrome Shop. We have my sister-in-law runs the back end of the Chrome Shop. I have my wife who runs the Triple R diesel side, the mechanic shop. You know, I run operations on the TCT side. So it's family-owned business. It consists of a great team, having a great staff, having great mechanics, a great dispatch team, a great coordinating team. So it's managing all three pieces, all three entities. I mean, we're growing almost to what, almost 300 trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're running 282 trucks. And you know, I got more work right now.
So you 282 trucks. So you be considered like a large carrier, right? I think a large carrier is like after 200.
Correct.
Right. So what's the difference? Because a lot of people who watch this show are small carriers, like under 200 or under 100. And then there's large carriers. Like what is the difference? Because you've been both.
Correct.
Right. So there's small carrier problems and there's mega carrier problems.
Yeah.
So tell me about some mega carrier problems that you have that people aspire to get to your level and to have those problems, but maybe they don't want those problems.
Man, it's just keeping up, you know, we get about almost 300 trucks. We're talking a lot of guys, you know, a lot of guys, payroll. It's just the staff, you know, just building up to a team. Like my dispatch team consisted of just 2-3 guys. That's it. You know, I'm up to almost 20 running 4 people per shift, you know, and
20 people dispatch.
Yeah. Yeah. So coordinating team, you know, we had to branch out, just hire different teams of coordinating, you know, and have the accessible, you know, guys on different locations, owner operators, you know, we got guys from California, New York, Florida that are all coming in here, South Texas to come work, you know, but it's just managing the whole piece of what I call final mile, right? So from start to finish, from load site to well site, you know, from, you know, the payroll side. I mean, it's a lot.
It is a lot. So, and like you said, you have your family kind of helping you out. So it's good. But I mean, I could just imagine just from the standpoint of, you know, dealing with, like you said, so much people. You have 20 dispatchers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 20 dispatchers, all these drivers. How big can you grow? What is too big?
Man, I want to be at my goal is 400, so I'm gonna get to 300 here pretty soon, and my goal by 2023 is to be at 400 truck fleet.
Is there any reason why the number is 400? You just like that number?
I just like 400.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Got you. So in terms of like business, is everything like the same way it was back in like 15? Now, what's the difference between those golden years of 15 and now running the sand like? Is it similar? Is it like in terms of the money you can make? It's kind of give us an idea of what that looks like.
It's very different. I mean, we're looking at a situation right now with Russia and Ukraine that's affecting, you know, the supply and demand. We have not to get into too political.
Yeah,
you have a president that's, if you go back 30, 40 years, you know, when a Democrat's running the office, oil and gas does very well.
Right.
And with Joe Biden in the office, you know, we're
not doing too well.
Yeah. you have a lot of pluses. You know, you have supply and demand. You know, during COVID, during the lockdowns, you had a situation where supply was at all time high. Demand was very low. Now they flip flop. Now you got demand high and supply down. So I mean, the price of oil is over 100, you know,
right.
So there's a lot of advantages. I would say, you know, for us here at TCT, you know, oil gas is always up and down, you know. Luckily, like for us, we've gone through three downturns, you know, three highs and three lows. I say we got 4 or 5 good years of this. Yeah.
Got you. Is this an industry for someone to get started in, or is this kind of one of those industries where, let me reframe that question. How do you get started in this industry? Somebody watching this who wants to be you, who's looking at this video and they're saying, you know, I want to do what Raul does. What would be your advice to them?
I would say stay out of the oil and gas. For sure. Stay out of the oil and gas.
Stay out.
For what I've gone through, you know, just three downturns, it's a tough industry, man. It really is. It's profitable when it's high.
Right.
When it's good. At 2014, we were doing very well. I mean, we did probably about 26 million for the year.
Right.
2014, you know, and it was great. But if you look at it, 15 and 16, it was tough. I mean,
right.
We're making $300, $325 a run at a 100-mile haul, you know, in a small town of Beckles, Texas. You know, I was in West Texas. It's a tough industry. You know, I would tell somebody, look, you want to get into trucking? Try something else other than oil.
It's really?
Yeah, for sure.
So you're not saying that just to keep your competition away,
no,
right?
No, I mean, I don't have competition. We're TCT.
There is no competition. But if you want to get in oil and gas, don't do it.
Think
about something else.
Don't do it. Yeah. Try reefer. Try dry van.
Raul runs this lane.
Flatbed.
Right,
don't get in oil and gas. Yeah.
Oh man, I love it. In terms of your businesses, what is your bread and butter? Because you have three businesses. What makes you the most in terms of revenue?
Oh, TCT right away. Yeah,
TCT for sure.
Yeah.
In terms of revenue. And then I guess that'll be the Chrome Shop next.
The Chrome Shop and the Body Shop does well too. I mean, paint and body. You look at the automotive sector, you know, and on the collision side. Well, on semis, there is a big need also as well for collision.
Mm.
And that's where my brother's been doing very well these last few years. So Body Shop, Collision, Chrome Accessories. Do we have the repair shop? So there's an avenue of kind of like a little trucking empire, right? So
yeah.
A little bit of everything. You know, we can do it all here at TCT, your Texas Chrome.
For sure.
R, yeah.
Are there any other add-ons that you're looking to expand into? Any other areas?
Fitness.
Vertically? Fitness.
Yeah.
So you want
to help.
You showed me the gym. The gym is phenomenal, which I hope there's like a little clip of the gym running right now as I talk. But how do you get into fitness?
Man, just trying to promote a healthier life, healthy lifestyle for a trucker, you know?
Okay.
Unfortunately, a truck driver, it's always going to get the short end of the stick, you know?
It's tough.
Yeah, it is. It's very tough. It's
okay.
Very tough.
So how do you promote fitness? Because you have the facility, but how do you monetize that? You actually have people, you're going to have people come in, like, join your gym?
Yeah, I mean, just helping them.
Okay.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
You know, giving them advice, giving them...
Got you. So for more of like a advice and education standpoint.
Correct.
Okay. TCT Fitness.
Yes, sir.
I like that. I like that. All right, man. Well, listen, man, this has been amazing. I've learned so much about you, your business. Got to meet your family and your extended family, your employees and so forth and so on. What's next for you, man? What else can we expect to
what's
see
next?
For you?
Yeah. Gosh, you know, look at a situation like in regards to truck sales, you know, getting back into building trucks, customizing, selling accessories. I talked about the oil and gas. It's always, you know, it's got its
up
highs
and
its lows. Eventually, oil is going to come back down, you know, whether it's 2 years or 4 years. When that happens, you know, I want to be ready to go. I want to be able to diversify and build trucks, sell trucks, and customizing for not just Texas or South Texas, but for the nation, you know?
Yeah. What part of the business is most fun to you? Is the customization part?
Probably the customizing.
Yeah. It seems like that would be
pretty cool. We built all them rigs, man, back in the 2001 to 2008. I mean, 1,200 rigs. And just watching these guys as we pick them up from the airport, we're driving into the property and just the look of them, just seeing the paint, the lights, the stacks, you know? And they're like, oh, wow. Like,
right. Yeah. Right. Now, awesome, man. All right, cool. We're gonna start wrapping up the show. Before we go, we always have a final thought that is basically something, you know, spiritual, entrepreneurial, whatever you want to leave the audience with. And then we just have to let everybody know where they can connect with you moving forward. If they don't follow you already, you have like a trillion followers on social media. So they probably already follow you. But if not, let them know. So let's start with the final thought. What would you leave the audience with?
Man, stay focused. Stay hungry. Stay humble. I mean, I think for me, I've been blessed with having my father around, teaching me everything that I know today. Family's for sure number one priority. Family's always important, but just having that drive, having that determination of just continuing working, you know, and staying focused. So I always look at myself and look ahead, you know, look ahead two, three steps forward and realizing that you can always diversify. You can always, you know, be hungry and keep going.
Yeah. Where is it at? You said your father is still around, right?
Yeah.
Is he here today?
Yeah.
I gotta go meet him.
For sure.
I gotta shake his hand, man.
You gotta say hi to Pops.
Man. I gotta definitely say hello to Pops. All right, cool. All right, man. And where can people connect with you and learn more about all the businesses?
They can follow me, Instagram or Facebook, Raul Mendez. They can, of course, our social pages.
Yep.
Triple R Diesel, Texas Chrome, and then, of course, TCT.
Okay. All right, Hustle fam. If you don't respect that, your whole perspective is whack. This has been an amazing episode. We are here in San Antonio, Texas, with the man himself, Raul Mendez, Triple R, TCT, Texas Chrome. I'm about to go take a tour of the facility again because I just love it. Thank you so much, man. It's been an awesome interview. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Hustle fam, we are out.
If you twisted, confused, or stuck about trucks, don't be dumb. This is the place to come. Truck and Hustle. Let's go.